On this week's episode of Work Trends, we're talking culture and tech with Allison Capon. Welcome to the Work Trends podcast from Talent Culture. I'm your host, Megan Mbiro. Every week, I interview interesting people and brands who are reimagining work. For more information, be sure to check us out at talentculture.com and join us live on Twitter every Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern using the hashtag WorkTrends. Today's guest is Allison Capon. Allison is the founder of Women Who Tech, a nonprofit that brings together women who are breaking new ground in technology. She's been named one of the most influential women in tech by Fast Company. So cool. I'm so glad to have her here today. Women Who Tech just finished their sixth Women's Startup Challenge in March, where they awarded a $50,000 grant to an app developed by a 13-year-old. Welcome to Work Trends, Allison.
Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be on.
You work with startup founders working on tech in all different markets. Give us your take on the hottest new business tech right now.
Absolutely. So one of the things that I know that is particularly interesting for your audience who works on HR is how do we address biases in hiring? And one of our former Women Startup Challenge finalists created an app called Blendor that we think has huge, huge implications for HR. Basically, what they do is they've developed an app to help companies overcome unconscious biases in hiring. So when they are recruiting candidates, they have created this app that has you go through a blind recruiting process. So when someone is applying through the app, you don't know if they're a woman or a man, you don't know what race they are. And so that really helps expand the recruitment process and help to begin to really remove some of those unconscious biases at the beginning of the hiring processes. And we're seeing more apps developed like this in major corporations, particularly tech companies, when they're doing their recruitment. They're under a lot of pressure right now to diversify their hiring, are starting to really embrace these types of apps.
Well, and everyone's under a lot of pressure because there's so much video and there's so much people out there putting themselves out there, right, on social, that I love the fact that we have this ability to alleviate some of this bias in hiring. Talk to us about what new technologies business leaders should keep an eye on, because clearly there's a lot going on right now.
Yeah, in terms of technology that business leaders should be keeping an eye on, one of the things that we are also seeing a big trend on is remote work and being able to provide these options to people, perhaps who live in different cities, even different countries, but you're able to really expand that pool of applicants and also helping with some diversity initiatives as well. And then what are the tools that you need to bring in to your workforce to be able to adapt that type of remote environment? So one of the biggest tools out there is Slack, and you're able to do a lot of communication via Slack and setting up different channels within Slack for different projects, different teams. So it allows for this ongoing communication, but also a lot of project management. You can also, from a development perspective, if you were working on web development or any sort of technical products, you can also build in a lot of integration into Slack. It all integrates with something called Git. And so there's all of these tools that are being constantly developed for Slack that is just really, really great for remote teams. And also, even if you're not remote, companies are using Slack internally as well.
Well, Slack has certainly gained a lot of momentum in this marketplace, so very exciting. I have been so inspired reading about the ideas presented by women at your startup challenge in March. The winner was Timeless, an app developed by a 13-year-old Emma Yang to help people with Alzheimer's, which is a fight that's very dear in, you know, near to me. So tell me more about the technology featured at this year's challenge.
Sure. So I'll start Maybe just a little bit of background of what we've been doing with our Women Startup Challenge. So we created the Women Startup Challenge to really showcase women-led startups and really provide much-needed funding for these women startups who, frankly, have been ignored by the investment world. So we're really trying to shake things up in the investor world by showcasing these incredible women-led startups. And for this year, we held our Women Startup Challenge focused on emerging tech. And our winner was this incredible young woman named Emma Yang, and she created an app that you were just talking about called Timeless. And it was inspired because of what her grandmother is going through with Alzheimer's. And so what the app does is it has built in facial recognition and machine learning to help people with Alzheimer's to recognize their loved ones, their friends, colleagues that they're continuing to work with or keep in touch with. And so we were just completely blown away that someone so young was able to develop such an incredible and useful app. And she's also working with researchers across the country who specialize in Alzheimer's. And she's going to be using the data from this app to really expand in building out the product.
Simple elegance is what I call it, right? She's connecting to our hearts. She's connecting to our minds, and it's timely. Totally awesome. Yes. So very cool stuff happening. What makes you feel hopeful right now about the tech world? I know these are uncertain times. I know we're at a place where we want to feel happy and good and hopeful. Tell us more about what's happening to lift our spirits on that front.
That's a really great question. I'm really hopeful because we are just seeing an incredible rise in the number of women-led tech startups who are just addressing incredible problems that are facing this world. They are addressing energy security, food security, and it's just amazing to see that at a time where, yes, they are experiencing major challenges in terms of receiving funding, they are also not letting those challenges stop them from pursuing their dreams and startups to truly make an impact in this world. And so that makes me really, really happy. One of the things that we're also very excited about is seeing the traction that we're having within our personal network of investors in helping to get these women funded. So in the past couple of years, since going through our Women Startup Challenges, our finalists have collectively raised over $20 million, and we are so, so proud of that.
That is amazing. I think everyone wants to hear these stories right now, right? I mean, we can choose what we want to feel good about and what we want to support. And this is living proof, right?
Absolutely.
So I think a lot of people here in the audience probably want to hear about what inspired you to start Women Who Tech.
So it was really inspired by my own personal experience of going to a lot of tech conferences and just seeing all of the panels and all of the keynotes that I was attending just featuring, frankly, white men, as if we women in tech didn't exist.
Right.
And so I took an opportunity to really build our network of what we were doing, because we knew that there were so many women who were working in tech. And we decided to launch something called the Women Who Tech Telus Summit. And that was a way for us to really highlight and showcase women founders, women technology leaders, and bring together this virtual conference where women in tech could be there to learn from each other, to support each other, and to begin to network more with each other. And it was an amazing, amazing experience. We had women like Arianna Huffington, Rashmi Sinha, the co-founder of SlideShare, which was acquired by LinkedIn, just talking about really thought-provoking topics, how to launch your own startup, how to get your startup funded, how to get more women involved in open source. And so that was really the catalyst behind starting Women Who Tech. And we did that telesummit for quite some time. And about 3 years ago, we took a step back and we said, you know, there's been such a rise in the number of women in tech organizations, which is amazing to see. So now you have organizations like Girls Who Code and Women Who Code and Girl Develop It. But when we took a step back and started looking at the data, we said, you know, what's not really being addressed? Not that diversity in conferences has been solved. It hasn't. Has it gotten better? Absolutely. But what else do we need to be working on? And we quickly saw the very dismal numbers of women-led startup founders not receiving funding. So last year, for example, about 1.9% of women of funding went to women founders. The rest of that money went to men. Mm-hmm. And for women of color, only 0.2% of VC money went to them. So huge, huge problem and obstacles. And then that's what led us to launch the Women Startup Challenge.
I appreciate you saying that we haven't solved this yet, because I think it's so true. I think we're at least more vocal, and I think people are listening and hearing. So I think that's the first step, but I think we've got a long way to go. Speaking of long timeframes, you've been running Women Who Tech for 10 years now. What have you learned from your experience? I know in my own life and experience, culture change takes time. Tell us more about this.
Yes, you hit it. Culture change takes a very long time, and we are not very patient people, especially in this day and age. Everything is about immediate gratification. So I think the first thing to recognize is when you are working on these issues around diversity and inclusion, you have to recognize, particularly with larger companies that, you know, have thousands and thousands of employees, you're not going to see change happen overnight. However, it is essential that we keep talking about this issue and educating senior leadership and board members about the steps that they can be taking to begin to address some very serious issues within their companies. And so that is one of the key things that we recommend that we keep doing, is we have to keep putting this pressure on, and we have to build in accountability for that. So that's one of the things that we continue to do with Women Who Tech and what we've been doing with our programs. So I think it's also important that as we are talking about these issues, that we not frame this as it's just women's problems or people right. of color to address these issues. We need allies at the table. So that means having men allies at the table when we are talking about getting more women involved in senior leadership, in board positions. It's not just about women being allies to each other. It's about all of us being allies. And the same goes for people of color. White people who have in a huge position of power need to be allies to people of color and uplift them and promote them and do the work that needs to be done to make sure that they are getting equal pay, that they are getting the same promotions, that they are at those major meetings and presentations, that they are getting board positions. It is on all of us to do this work together. And that's how we begin to create the culture change.
According to LinkedIn's research, listen to this, everyone, only 28% of software engineers are women. And that number has gone up only 3% over 15 years. How can companies hire more women into what is historically been a male-dominated field, kind of like software development, tech, support, any of these roles? Talk to us a little bit more about the reality of these stats that remain pretty low.
Absolutely. So for us, it's really about a networking issue and also about the culture in the company. So I'll talk about the networking issue first. I believe that companies will be the most successful, and we've seen this work as well when in our data, is when the companies are very intentional about building in diverse and inclusive networks into their recruitment process. And also, as part of that, how do you build that into your recruitment process? So that's going to be building networks with diverse and inclusive organizations. So if we're talking about a tech company, that would be, you know, building programs with organizations like Women Who Tech, building programs and outreach work with organizations like Black Girls Code or Women 2.0. There are numerous organizations out there that companies can be working with to build programs and network from, and that is a great recruitment source. But what we don't recommend that companies do, which they often do, is sometimes they'll just come to us and they'll be like, hey, we have these jobs. Do you know anybody who would be interested in them? That's not being intentional and building a relationship with an organization. And you're just not going to get much of a response by that, because frankly, we feel like we're just being used and there's no relationship there. This is all about building relationships. So that's one of the things that companies can be doing. And then for companies, particularly larger companies that already have a team of women in the company that are working on the tech side, we've seen a lot of success with getting their buy-in in terms of having senior leadership go to them and ask them, what can we be doing differently inside the company to support you, to advance your skills? What can we be doing to expand our recruitment tactics to your networks? How do we provide that support? And the BBC has been doing some really interesting work around this, where they have been meeting with their technical team of women, and they've have formed these meetups inside BBC where women are coming together weekly or monthly and having formal meetups where they talk about some of the issues that they are facing professionally, what's working, what's not working. And this has also helped served as a recruitment tactic for the BBC, because these women are beginning to feel much more supported and much more networked inside the company.
Smart tactics when you talk about recruiting. I hope everyone's listening out there. And if you want to weigh in with your thoughts, utilize the hashtag WorkTrends, and we'd love to hear from you. So we talked a lot about on this podcast, the Me Too movement. Women Who Tech did a survey, and 41% of the women who responded, and that's over, if we've got our math caps on right now, that's over 300 out of 730 women said they've experienced harassment in the tech industry. What can we learn from these surveys results? I mean, these are very powerful numbers.
They are horrific numbers, frankly. What can we learn from the results is, well, frankly, we have a huge problem on our hands. You know, we used to hear these stories here and there about women who were being harassed at work, particularly around sexual harassment. We'd see these stories reported in various blogs all the way up to the New York Times. And it was one of the reasons that we decided to do this survey was we weren't seeing a lot of data to back up and support these stories. We certainly knew that they were happening because we have heard them very sadly for mm-hmm. many years.
Right.
And the data, we now have the data showing that 41% of women who we surveyed who work in tech have been harassed. And so we have the data now, and now it's time for the companies to take action. Mm-hmm. And we are starting to see that. They are beginning to build in anti-harassment policies for these companies. And then what are the steps for employees to take in terms of reporting them? We're also seeing trainings happening. You know, I can't really, obviously trainings are better than no trainings, but, you know, it really also goes back to the culture of acceptance of what these companies have accepted before and how you can't change this overnight. And so while trainings are certainly a good first step, it's not necessarily going to fix the issue.
We have the data, we can take action steps, and, you know, speaking of action steps, let's talk about how we move forward. I think we've all realized that changing the culture at tech organizations is a hugely important step, right? What are questions leaders should be asking about their own culture?
That's a great question. So for larger tech companies, particularly when you have hundreds of thousands of employees, it's really looking at what mechanisms you are putting in place for any type of harassment or discrimination. What kind of policies do you have in place? What are third parties that you can be looking to help assess what is happening currently within your own company that you as a CEO or someone in HR may not be looking at? So hiring third parties to do that independent research, that's something that Uber did when the Susan Fowler case came out, and then they saw that there was a big problem with harassment that their senior leadership was not looking at. And then once you begin to find these problems, then creating solutions to alleviate this and address this within the company, that would be the next step. Also, unconscious biases is something that is huge within companies, not just in the hiring, which we were talking about earlier on, but taking a look, who is in senior leadership? Who is getting promoted? Who is at the seat at the table leading those major presentations? Is that always the white man? Is it always the white woman? Who is it that is taking these leadership roles in the company and getting promoted? So really digging into that data and taking a look at it and then beginning to address it. If you are just seeing that it's just one type of person that is constantly being promoted.
Again, action steps. This is what I love so much about this conversation right now. Collect the data. We have power in doing that. I think it's amazing. The things we can do when you start really drilling down and saying, who's doing what? If everyone gets together, it's really about creating culture change, all of this. So that really helps. Talk to us about progress that you're seeing right now on these issues. Like action, where are you seeing that?
Yeah, so I talked a little bit about it earlier. In terms of on the harassment side, you know, since this data has come out and all of these stories have come out about harassment in the tech sector, harassment in the entertainment sector, we are definitely seeing companies quickly develop harassment policies and rolling them out at the companies. We are also seeing an interest in unconscious bias trainings, which we are frankly very, very excited about, because that is one of the keys in addressing this, is addressing our unconscious biases, because that's what is causing, frankly, a lot of these problems. So if we can get our staff, and not just the most senior leadership, but our staff as well, to think about how we perceive different people in different situations, that is an incredible first step in starting to tackle these issues inside the companies. Overall, you know, we're not seeing a ton of progress. I think we're seeing more baby steps in terms of addressing some very, very challenging issues. And then if we go back on the funding side for what we're working on at Women Who Tech and the startup challenge, which is ultimately how do we move that number from 1.9% of funding going to women? How do we get that up to 10% to 20%? And that's something, again, it's not going to happen overnight. But one of the things that we are excited about is we are seeing more women who are becoming investors and then in turn investing in more women-led startups. But again, we don't want to see this siloed into it's up to us as women to fix this problem. Investors are out to make a ton of money. And so they're losing out by not investing in women-led founders when data actually shows that there's a 35% ROI when women-led tech founders are actually funded. So there's a lot of work to be done in breaking through kind of the gatekeepers of investing who traditionally right. have been men and getting them really more educated and exposed to game-changing women-led startups and getting them funding them.
There's really nothing more important than education, in my view, when you talk about women becoming their own investors and driving that culture. Very, very key here. You know, listen, this has been such an interesting conversation for myself and the audience. I love that there's progress, and I'm with you. I think we're taking baby steps. I think if we look at this realistically, but at least we're taking steps and we're starting to understand the power of data in these conversations. So on a lighter note for everybody, talk to us before we wrap up here about the best book you've read recently. I know you are so busy, but I'm certain that you have time to at least share with us what's inspiring you right now.
Well, it's actually related to this topic. So I recently got a copy of Emily Chang's book, Brotopia. And it's not like it's a fun and exciting read in terms of kind of taking my mind out of the space. It actually fuels me more because right. she has been able to collect all of these very unfortunate stories of what women in tech and women founders have faced. And a lot of it, you know, speaks to the data and the topics that we have been talking about and how much work needs to be done. But frankly, even for someone like me who has been working in this sector for so many years, some of the stories that she uncovered still shocked me. And that's just depressing to hear about investors who are having some very inappropriate parties. And it's just as part of this culture and funding culture, it just makes me think, gosh, we have just so much more work to do.
Allison, I'm with you. Onward we go. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening to Work Trends from Talent Culture. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And I'd be really grateful if you took a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes. It helps other people find our show. If you know someone who would enjoy listening, please share it with them. You can learn more about the future of work at talentculture.com.